This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Americans eat more berries now than ever before, and a huge chunk of the U.S. berry supply comes to us from Mexico, where a U.S. company named Driscoll's is under fire for mistreating its workers. In fact, farm workers in Baja California, who are primarily indigenous Oaxacans, are protesting slave labor conditions and calling for a boycott of the berries. Now, a group based in San Diego called the Frente Indígena Oaxaqueño Binacional has organized a program to provide musical instruments for the children of farm workers. Joining us to talk about the issues as well as this program of music is my guest Maria Elena Gaitan. She is a musician, a linguist, a cultural worker, a performance artist, scholar, and educator. Welcome to the show, Maria Elena.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk about the poor working conditions in the farms. About a year ago, the LA Times reporter Richard Marosi had broken the story of how badly Mexican farm workers in berry and other produce farms were being treated. And Driscoll's, which is an American family-owned brand, had denied the allegations. How bad are the working conditions, as far as you know, at these farms in Baja California?
Well, you know, Sonali, I saw that article as well, and compared to what I know about the real working conditions, it sounded like the workers were at a country club, you know, with exercises in the morning and wonderful places to live, but that's not the case at all. What I know about the working conditions of the berry workers is that there are no bathrooms, there's no water, there's no anything. Their housing is often structures that look like chicken coops. And there is an incredible amount of violence around them constantly. They have been protesting the slave wages and conditions, and the company has reneged, and it's also brought in the government of Baja California to enforce any kind of protest or movement for wage fairness among the Oaxaqueño farm workers. I think one of the things that's most striking to me is that the children are living in these conditions. We often think, oh, the farm workers is just, you know, a man out there in the sun, which would be hard enough. But these are families, and the children are living in these conditions from communities that are highly musical and artistic in their homeland. So to live in this sort of berry desert and be suffering these conditions and without any access to one's cultural practices in terms of music and art, it has been really hard on them. Anyone who's traveled to Oaxaca will tell you the music is everywhere. It is central to life.
And so I want to talk to you about that program in just a few moments, but how have it isn't just farm workers in Baja California, right? I mean, I understand that the struggle actually crosses borders. We have Mexican farm workers here in the U.S. Who are also protesting their working conditions, right?
Yes, I think up in the state of Washington, the berry workers actually got some company, I think it was a Costco-related company, to back off and stop providing those. The problem we have in California, of course, is we no longer have a farm workers union. They are now foundations. There is no union to defend farm workers. And I've been told by those who are working with the berry pickers on both sides of the border that the conditions under which they're working sends us all the way back to the 1930s. That's how bad they are.
And so a lot of these farm workers have had to leave their homes looking for work, leave Oaxaca, go to places like the United States, Baja California, et cetera. And so we're talking about wholesale migration, whole families migrating, right?
Yes, I think we have seen the Oaxacan community coming into the Los Angeles area for a while now. And we know that the Oaxacan community is large and active here. It is a mass migration that's going on.
The company, Driscoll's, gives the impression that everything is quite good. They're an American family-owned brand that has been protecting the rights of farm workers themselves. They've worked very hard to have a slick PR machine. But as far as you know, is this just PR?
Driscoll's has done a good job of bathing itself in accolades, but the truth of it is, I don't know of any farmer or any ranchero in California that gave up anything unless it came out of protests and organizing. That squeezing of the workers is very a finely oiled machine that includes on the U.S. side not only slave wages but also deportations. And this is historic. Anytime farm workers organized before they had a union, and of course they don't have one now, they would be deported and not paid on payday. That was one of the practices that we knew of for a long time. So I don't know where Driscoll's is getting its fantasy, but that's not what we're seeing in the photographic work of David Bacon, for instance, who's documented farm workers in California. You'll also see these conditions.
That's right, David Bacon, an important labor journalist with our sister station KPFA in Berkeley. So let's go back to the issue of the children. Children in these farm working communities are not just struggling because they are not in their home communities, but also I understand there are documented instances of child labor, right?
Yes, not only child labor, but also extensive documentation of rape as well. And so there is this violence around the children, and the children are working. There's a lot of documentation. Sorry?
Rape by whom?
If the Baja California government is sending in its military to quash these things, I cannot tell you that they did it or that the company did it, but rape is an issue in the community. There's no security in these work camps at all. So anybody could come in and do such a thing. But I guess when they're in a confrontational position with the company and the government at this point, anything is possible. The children, of course, are working every day, and they have not had access to education and, of course, no access to music, except for some of the elders who actually brought their instruments with them, carried them all the way from Oaxaca, and have been trying to teach the children, but of course they cannot teach the children anything without other instruments. Mm-hmm. The children have no instruments.
Do companies like Driscoll's, etc., deny that there is child labor?
I haven't seen any of their denials of child labor, but I won't be surprised if they do. But that is traditional in farm labor. Child labor is integral to farm worker life. Children have always been out in the fields at 3 and 4 in the morning, you know, which is when they start working often because of the heat or the sun. So this is a historic practice. If Driscoll's is doing something fabulous, I'll be really shocked.
So let's talk about how the effort to get music into the lives of these children is based here in the United States. I mentioned the FIOB, the Frente Indígena Oaxaqueño Binacional, the FIOB, which is the organization that is working to provide musical instruments for the children of farm workers. You mentioned music is really important in their lives, but of course they don't have access to music unless they, brought them with their, unless their families brought them when they migrated. How are these children able to get any musical education?
Well, the only music education or contact they're having with music is from those elders who brought instruments, and it's only a few people. It isn't a huge number of people. So they are, they're without access at this point. And I imagine to some people who might be listening, the idea of musical instruments in the middle of a labor strike or a labor struggle seems almost counterintuitive. But in fact, the Oaxacan culture and many cultures and indigenous cultures, particularly in Mexico, are steeped in art and music. And it is their daily life. So the kids are actually, without access.
And so what kind of music are we talking about here? Explain to our audience exactly the kind of music, the traditional music that's so important in the culture of these communities.
A lot of the Oaxacan musical communities are based around the instruments that are used for banda. These are mostly metal and woodwind instruments like tubas and trombones and saxophones. And then on the woodwind side, clarinets, mostly clarinets. And I think flutes are also part of it. It could be, Sonali, that these instruments have become more used probably throughout Mexico because they're more durable. A violin, a cello, the string instruments tend to be much more delicate they react to climate and to all, moisture and all kinds of stuff. And I think the metal and the woodwind instruments are more resilient, and they are in fact part of community life. If you go to Oaxaca City in the central plaza, there will be music all day long, all weekend long. It's just integral to their everyday life.
And how are children, you know, going to have access to these instruments? Tell us how this program works and how people here in the U.S. can get involved.
I was contacted by the FIOB committee in the Frente Indígena Oaxaqueño Binacional Committee in San Diego. They are the people that have been going down into Baja California, into San Quintín, where that particular community is going through a lot of struggles that your listeners and viewers might be aware of. There have been articles in Al Jazeera and so forth, so they may be aware of this. The children are desirous of instruments, and that's how that initiated this project. So the idea is for us to call out to the public and ask for instruments that people can donate, and then the FIOB in San Diego will be responsible for getting them to the community in San Quintín. They've set up a Facebook page. It's called Música Sin Fronteras, Music Without Borders, and there's a phone number there as well. So if any of your listeners or viewers are able to donate a useful instrument, not necessarily a new one, although that would be great too, but an instrument that is not so broken that we cannot use it, that would be one step in trying to bring some kind of civility to the conditions under which these children are living now.
And so how can music lift up the lives of farm worker children? And as you were saying, you know, it might be hard to imagine that in the midst of slave labor conditions, protests, etc., that music might seem to be a sort of a superficial addition. But of course, we know art, music, these are usually very important means of expression, not just cultural expression, but even protest expression.
Absolutely, Sonali. And you know, we know from the lesson in South Africa, in the African National Congress and the liberation movements there, how incredibly important music was. Music was the battle cry. Music was to lift your spirit. Music was a way of calling people together. And this is no different. One of the things that I think, if you don't mind, I'm going to mention is sometimes in progressive movements, the music and the art becomes you make the poster and you bring your guitar and sing that song. Well, in other communities, that's not how music and art is. Music and art is central to identity and how you move through life. So I think it can play an incredibly important role. It does play an incredibly important role. And now we have an opportunity to support children connecting back into their musical roots and being able to be part of their community. I would just also mention, Sonali, that in Venezuela we have seen the music program that has called El Sistema, which is particularly focused on children at risk. There isn't a town in Venezuela that doesn't have a child orchestra, and that orchestra is the center of community life. We are trying to replicate that now in LA, a tiny bit at a time, because Gustavo Dudamel is our the conductor of the LA Symphony. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure we would not have that kind of interest in El Sistema. But when El Sistema starts producing amazing musicians, but also puts children at the center of community life, we can all be inspired by that. What happens in Oaxaca really is not much different than that in that regard.
And are you calling on Americans to respect the boycott against Driscoll's Berries?
You know, I was so disheartened. I went into a Whole Foods, which I don't go into very often, but there was a product I had to get, and it was the only place I could get it now. It was an emergency. But I walked through the produce aisle. It was filled with Driscoll's. That's all they had. So people have seen them at Trader Joe's. They've seen them at Whole Foods. They've seen them at Ralph's, whatever market. And what the organizers are asking is that we do what we used to do when we had a farm workers union. You go to the market, the supervisor, the manager, and you request that they take these berries off of the shelves because they're coming from exploitive labor and exploitive child labor. And they will sell you, well, we'll tell somebody, whatever. But if enough people do that, they will respond. So we're hoping that people will take their cue from this program and from the things they see around them and realize that they also have power. They have the power to, of their own voice, to stop this by requesting that markets and stores stop stocking Driscoll's. And probably there are other brands, but the focus for now is on Driscoll's.
Well, also the musical instruments program, you said there's a Facebook page, and we'll post a link to that from our website later today as well, if our audience wants to donate musical instruments to the children. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Sonali, thank you so much. It's my great pleasure to be part of your program. I'm very honored. And just know that there is also a phone number on the Facebook page. Mark Day, who is a filmmaker and very progressive filmmaker of many years, is also part of this campaign and is helping out on the phone line. So you may get Mark Day if you call. But he is bilingual, and all callers are welcome. So we're hoping people will actually pick up the phone and go to their Facebook page and talk to those managers. Thank you so much, Sonali. I appreciate it.
And we'll post again a link from risingupwithsonali.com, which is our website. My guest is Maria Elena Gaitan. She's a musician, linguist, cultural worker, performance artist, scholar, and educator. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar.